The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come to order. Colleagues, we're going to take a few things slightly out of order. We're going to go into the work session on 2562. In general, we're going to move all of these bills to revenue because revenue is asked to see them. And with that, Representative Sheehan.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2562 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Representative Sheehan moves that House Bill 2562 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Any objection?
I just have a question. How come?
Representative Smith, the explanation I received from the chairs of revenue was that they wanted to manage the capital gains issues in revenue and felt that what we might do here would be, how can I put this nicely, time better spent doing something else. So they recommended that those move right over to revenue for work.
Right.
Yes.
And four of them have subsequent referrals to revenue anyway. The other three we asked for the subsequent referrals.
Further questions? Further discussion? Seeing none, is there any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2562 is moved to the Revenue Committee by prior reference without recommendation, noting that Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes the work session on House Bill 2562, and I will open a work session on House Bill 2730.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 2730 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Ms. Sheehan moves that House Bill 2730 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 2730 is moved to the Revenue Committee by prior reference without recommendation, noting, again, Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes the work session on House Bill 2730. Open a work session on House Bill 3282.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3282 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee.
Representative Sheehan moves that House Bill 3282 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3282 is moved to the Revenue Committee without recommendation, noting Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes work session on House Bill 3282. Now, open a work session on House Bill 3283.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3283 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee.
Representative Sheehan moves that House Bill 3283 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee. Any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3283 is moved to the Revenue Committee without recommendation, noting Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes the work session on House Bill 3283. And I'll open a work session on House Bill 3296.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3296 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee.
Representative Sheehan moves that House Bill 3296 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3296 is moved to the Revenue Committee without recommendation, noting Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes the work session on House Bill 3296. I'll open a work session on House Bill 3420.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3420 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Representative Sheehan moves that House Bill 3420 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3420 is moved to the Revenue Committee by prior reference without recommendation, noting Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes the work session on House Bill 3420, and I'll open a work session on House Bill 3454.
Mr. Chair, I move House Bill 3454 be referred without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference.
Representative Sheehan moves that House Bill 3454 be moved without recommendation to the Revenue Committee by prior reference. Is there discussion? Any objection? Seeing none, House Bill 3454 is moved to the Revenue Committee by prior reference without recommendation, noting, again, Representative Lindsay and Chair Reed are excused. This concludes the work session on House Bill 3454. With that, I will open a public hearing, possible work session on House Bill 2840. Zach.
House Bill 2840 expands the Green Jobs Growth Initiative to include analysis of growth factors and employment projections for green jobs in forest product industries.
And we have Representative Witt. Thank you.
Good Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, State Representative Brad Witt from House District 31 in the upper northwest corner of our state. I am appearing before you here this afternoon in favor of House Bill 2840. This is a bill that is designed to increase employment in one of our state's heritage industries, namely forestry. What the bill does quite simply is ask that the State Workforce Investment Board take a look at demand occupations in the forest products industry and to anticipate those jobs which will be increasing on into the future, assess what job skills would be necessary for training requirements and skills to compete for those jobs, and that that would be a first step in terms of skilling up our workforce to adequately prepare itself for participation in those demand occupations on into the future. With that, I would urge the committee's affirmative action on this bill. This is an opportunity for us to get some jobs into our rural communities, which are in dire need of good family wage jobs. Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee.
Thank you, Representative. Are there questions? I just had one. I noticed that the State Workforce Investment Board was to develop the plan for the Green Jobs Growth Initiative. Do you know, we have some folks signed up, so
yes,
it's possible they'll address the issue, but yes. I was just curious what the board had done thus far and whether this had been discussed with it. I'm assuming we're going to hear something about that.
Yes, that would be an area, Mr. Chairman, where I'm actually not adequately familiar with what they have, in fact, done. So I noticed that you have, I think, a current, I know at least in the past, your co-vice chair, Representative Meyer, has served on that board and is probably infinitely more familiar with their work than I am. So I would defer to her expertise.
Thank you, Representative. Further questions? See none. Thank you very much.
Thanks very much.
Mr. Chair, I assume that Greg White is signed up on the sheet. If not, you might be somebody that you would want to bring forward who could really address that question.
Is he here?
Yes.
Would he mind coming forward? That would be a nice way to get started. Thank you very much. I know you're not signed up, but it'd be great to hear from you on what the board has done and what it would do if this passed.
Yes, Representative Benz, members of the committee, Representative Beyer. For the record, my name is Greg White. I'm executive staff to the Oregon Workforce Investment Board. Excuse me. I did not sign up to testify because the Oregon Workforce Investment Board has no fundamental problem with the bill. The Green Jobs Growth Plan actually has been completed and submitted to the legislature per the ORS submission requirements, and that has we would consider this to be an addendum to that plan. I must say that even though I believe you would have on record that the fiscal impact is minimal, I will suggest that this is not free, and there would cost something to actually contract this type of analysis out, as we did for the economic analysis contained in the Green Jobs Growth Plan, as it is using federal funds that are under the control of the governor.
So if this passed, then what would happen next? Would you ask for more funding in order to be able to do what this requires, or what would happen?
Department of Community Colleges and Workforce Development that administers the Federal Workforce Investment Act funding would contract for someone to actually perform the analysis that's required by the bill.
And then after the the analysis is performed, it goes to the community colleges. Is that how the
I would no, yes, Representative Benz, I believe that what would happen is that it would be submitted to the legislature as required for any report to be submitted.
Questions for Mr. White? Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
We have folks signed up for this, Bill Clutine, Mike Sullivan, and Ralph Saperstein. If you could come up as a panel, that would be great.
Chair Vince, Vice Co-Chairs, Committee, for the record, Bill Clutine, Carpenters Industrial Council. If I may take you back to the 2009 session, House Bill 3300 came through the House, through the Senate, and signed by the governor. And actually, 2840 is a mirror copy of House Bill 3300, which became law. We worked this bill through in 2009, and if you notice on page one on 3300, it's stated dislocated workers in timber. Well, it sounded good at the time, but when we went out into the field, we were asked by the people that work in the forest, what about, does that mean me, or does that my job count, or what? So, in House Bill 2840, Chair Vince, we substituted the word forest products instead of the word timber. And the key to this whole bill and 3300 was in Section 1 on 2840, if you read line 6 down through, right on down through, talks about number one is a green job, means a job that provides a service, product. And then the key to this bill is line 16, dislocated workers in declining industries who are seeking training for high wage green jobs. And committee, we are in the declining industry. And if you're not classified as a green job, you really don't get the retraining possibilities, and this is what brought this bill forward. On page 2 on House Bill 2840, lines 18 through 28 basically follow what was passed in House Bill 3300 in 2009. The wording's there. The workforce development people did their job, turned their report in, and hopefully most of the job classifications that we've entered into 2840 was covered when they studied the word timber, when they put this bill into effect. And our other major change is on page 2, line 29. And there we actually, as used in this section, forest products industry includes, but is not limited to, businesses that grow, manage, harvest, transport, or process forest, wood, and paper products. I think we tried to cover all of them. Senator Edwards on the Senate side, when we was working Senate Bill 192, which is a mirror of House Bill 2840, he says you don't have anything in there about people who buy and sell lumber. Senator Edwards is a lumber broker. But Senate Bill 192 passed the Senate 29-0, and hopefully we get the same response here. Continue to lose workers, and we hope the committee looks at this as a way to help retrain our displaced people, or if there's any retraining money left, some of our people could qualify for Trade Act, there's possible retraining there, but Chair, I'll stop right there. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.
Good afternoon, Chair Vance and committee members. For the record, my name is Mike Sullivan. I am the Oregon Political Director for the Association of Western Pulp and Paper Workers, commonly known, thank God, for AWPPW. It's kind of all vegetable soup in a lot of ways. But quite seriously, this is an important bill for pulp and paper workers as well. Every plant that is shut in Oregon to date, they've qualified for the Trade Act benefits. And presently, you've recently heard about Blue Heron. And one of the things that broke their back more than anything of late was the idea the raw chip is now at a record price, which drove Blue Heron into the bankruptcy. It was a combination of those things, the environmental lawsuits over the years. And, you know, the workers there did everything they could. They bought the company. It's 100% recyclable, and it's a tragedy. It's a local tragedy. Oregon City lost its largest tax base. And so this is important not only for the workers there, but their families and businesses that contributed to the production of Blue Heron. So I, like Bill Cludian, would hope that you pass this out with a due pass. Thank you.
Thank you, Mike.
For the record, Catherine Venata, Governmental Affairs Manager of the Northwest Pulp and Paper Association, pleased to be here today, sitting between two labor representatives that represent folks that work for us. The Northwest Pulp and Paper Association has written testimony that explains why we support the different sections of the bill. But I'd just like to draw your attention to the fact that even since Senate Bill 192 passed the Senate, we've had another pulp and paper mill close in Oregon. I've listed in there the five different locations that have closed over the last 15 years. And as this happens, one thing that we try to do is find new jobs within the company or within the industry for our dislocated workers. And we seek all the training possibilities or retraining possibilities for our workers. We believe that the expansion of the green jobs definition from timber to forest products would allow even more opportunities for our dislocated workers, and we urge your support. Thank you.
Thank you. Are there questions for this panel? Catherine and I have one. The concept of the bill is to develop a plan for a green jobs growth initiative. So what is the plan? When one looks at this, it's you hope someone would come up with some idea to create these jobs, but just what is it? What is it that the plan would, in your opinion, best focus upon?
Chair Benz, the bill has two different concepts. And to go along with the aspirational goals of retraining and expanding green jobs. The first you'll find in Section 1, which is the targeted populations and how we want to define the targeted populations. The second is the Workforce Investment Board work and the Oregon Business Development Department. And I'm going to let Bill talk about the goal of, because this actually isn't our bill. This is actually Labor's bill. I'm going to let them talk about it. But just note there, we had to define what the green job was before we could put it in other parts of statute. And that's the rather strange statutory construction that you see.
Actually, thank you for that. I think I understood I understand better now what the bill is trying to accomplish. So if it's to add, as it does, or expand, as it does, the definition of forest products, timber to forest products, I understand that element. So with that, I don't think I need to ask Bill. Unless Bill, do you want to expand upon or talk about what the plan should do to create more jobs? That's what I'm most interested in, of course.
If I may, Chair Benz, committee, What this whole thing does, it gets a heads up on possible layoffs or discontinued jobs. The they'll already have an idea where these people can go or train for when they lose their job, whether it's a highly classified job in their own area where they can retrain on the technical equipment. If we ever get a federal forest plan where we can go into our forest and our cogeneration plants, or some of our electricians and maintenance people will already be heads up and can retrain to run these cogeneration plants. And I think that's the intent of the whole plan, sir, to be heads up, ready to go when people do lose their job.
Thank you. Further questions? Yes, Reverend Weiner.
It's kind of a general comment to any one of you. But putting green jobs or green there, it almost seems to me like the green movement's what's created this situation with pulp and paper shutting down and everything. So we're tying ourselves to a green movement that has destroyed your industry, and I'm just wondering why we would do that. Never? So, I mean, any comments on that?
If I may, Chair Bench, or Zane Weiner.
Weidner, not Weiner. He's over in education.
It's not a term that I liked at one time, but we're in that mode. We're past that mode. If you're not in a green category anymore, it just don't seem like you get the attention as quickly as what you would if you was just a other classifications. I know that's not a good answer, but today the green economy, green jobs, is just a popular term and people catch on to it quicker. As I said, sir, I know that's not a very good definition. But.
Further questions?
Chair Bounce, Representative Weiser. My opinion is that green jobs should pay some green. And I don't see these green jobs paying the wages and benefits that pulp and paper and wood products get. And so I think we're going to prove the definition of what a green job is. One that is green in the idea of the environment, one that pays actual money.
I guess if I may
follow up.
I just have a phone call on my phone while I'm sitting here from a buddy of mine who did vibration work at Blue Heron Paper. He was scrambling, who went from $150,000 a year to not having any work at all. All these guys made $80,000 to $100,000 a year, and we're going to train them for green jobs that pay probably $40,000 a year. And I almost find the terminology and what we're using here a little bit offensive, because this is what destroyed your industry. I mean, the pulp and paper and wood products is where my family comes from, and we're tying this to something. I mean, we need to be real and say, hey, we need to retrain our wood product guys and our timber guys and stop trying to tie it to green. I think we need to stand up and be proud of the industry that we came from and where we were located.
Chair Bentz, Representative Weidner, it would appear from my perspective that we don't have many friends. And so sometimes you have to join them if you can't lick them. I would give you the example of the steel workers, which I come from, are now in alliance with the Sierra Club. But perhaps that's a better place to be than the target on the wall, if you catch my drift. And it isn't just the radical environmental people in this state, but it is also the economics of our trade laws. I mean, before Blue Heron,
that's the international traders. They didn't want us to have this conversation.
That's all. I don't want to say that.
The House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development will come back to order. And I think what we'll do is ask Jim Welch to come up. Jim? We've apparently lost our other three witnesses.
Chair Bentz, Chair Byer, Jim Welch, representing the Oregon Cattlemen and Oregon State Grange on this particular subject. And I think most of my clients would say, you know, when the green movement started and they started including and excluding certain categories of business industry, a lot of us said, hey, we're green in the forest products and in agriculture, and we've always been green. And a lot of us made a lot of green back in those industries, myself being included. And so we don't have a problem with this particular legislation and would be supportive, especially for those seeking work in the green industry. I'd rather see the determination made for instead of reducing or declining industry for a resurgent in green industries, because I think by reclassifying as several years ago we did in this body that these industries were green, I would like to see some resurgence and more jobs coming in the future. If this will be helpful, we're very supportive. Thank you.
Thank you, Jim. Are there questions?
Sure.
Representative Smith.
I don't know if it's a question for you or for the chair or for somebody else, but getting the getting a sense of what the displaced workers would be eligible to get or do that they're not eligible to get or do now is an answer that's eluded me. And maybe that's my own it doesn't mean I'm opposed to it, right? Helping the displaced worker seems important. But I'm not clear what the if you qualify as a green job person, whatever, what are the specific things you get? Does it cost anything, et cetera? That I haven't been able to figure out. We had a conversation with the proponents in the hallway, and I got some version of it, you know, some helpful answer. And so it's probably my own thickness that has made it elude me so much.
Chair Bentz and Representative Smith, I would have to have more explanation in that area to not being the sponsor of the bill. And I think their intent is important. to you as a committee, and even if you have to have them come back up and explain some more, we were kind of interrupted. So,
thank you, Jim. And I might say that when I read the bill and I read it through a number of times, I was trying to identify exactly what this would do. And I think Ms. Vanetta addressed it with using the word aspirational. That's what this is.
Yeah.
It's a device that's filled with hope, and I'm not sure. it's sad that it can't do more, but given our economic situation, this may be as good as it gets. And it's unfortunate because all of us would like this to be more aggressive, but that requires more money, and we don't have it.
Got it.
And that's why that's what I saw when I read this bill.
Got it.
Anything further, Jim? Thank you very much. Does anyone else have any comments on this bill? It's not ready to move, so none. Thank you very much. I'll close the public hearing on 2840. And Zach, is 2879, is that who the representative is waiting to testify about? Is that who you don't? Thank you. Open a public hearing on 2879. Representative Jensen and Representative Smith.
If I might, Mr. Chair, I'd like to answer a question from one perspective about Representative Widener's question about green jobs. Anything that produces that.
I'm not sure if you're offering that or if you're just...
it's under $50. I've never seen one that big before, Representative Jensen.
Oh, well, I'll forego that.
Please.
For the record, Bob Jensen, State Representative, House District 58, that's Umatilla County. which and it's almost exclusively all of Umatilla County, with the exception of a very nice part up in Milton Free Water area. I think I only have a few very brief comments to make, and thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, for the opportunity to comment about Grow Oregon. I've had the good fortune and the bad fortune, maybe, of having a lot of experience over the years with jobs programs. Mostly the experience comes in the private sector, where a friend of mine and I got together and figured if you turn 500 plus people loose in Washington, D.C. To pass laws, it will be virtually impossible for them not to create a job for us. That if we just are smart enough to pay attention to what they're passing and opportunistic enough to and gambling enough to jump in, they'll do something that would allow us to make money. Such happened during the Carter administration, and my apologies to the young folks on your committee that do not go back with first-hand memory of the Carter administration, but being chronologically disadvantaged, there's a wonderful thing called history books that'll help you catch up on it. The Carter administration, like every administration, especially after FDR, but even some before that, was worried about promoting the issue of jobs. And so they started what was known as the Targeted Job Tax Credit Program. Oh, that wonderful word, tax credit, seems to be almost contagious when we get to legislative bodies. The Targeted Job Tax Credit Program was one that would give the employer a tax credit for hiring people from some identified, some identified categories that were unemployed or even, for that matter, perhaps underemployed, seriously underemployed. The program kind of floundered around during the Carter administration, but attracted quite a bit of popularity, especially in the business world. When Ronald Reagan came to power in 1980, in the election of 1980, no good member of the other party comes into the presidency and wants to continue in whole a previous president's governor or whatever it might be's program. So the new administration added some new wrinkles and curves to it, and we had started out with the Carter administration's program and managed to make some kind of comfortable, work that we could make a little supplemental money for. With the changes that the Reagan administration brought on with it, it required complete and total rethinking, and we took advantage of that and built a rather substantial little industry for ourselves with it. In all fairness, with that and with this experience, quite honestly, most of the jobs programs that I've looked at, and I've looked at all of them from a somewhat self-serving role of purpose, most of the jobs programs I've looked at, when you really measure them, have come up short. The TJDC, as it was known, almost no employers hired somebody simply on the basis of the tax credit they were going to get. They didn't change their employment practices based on the tax credit they were going to get. But it was nice because they got a tax credit when they hired somebody who fit the category. and therein was the source of our income. Being that as it may, when I was first approached by my good friend and colleague, now Representative Smith, to participate in this program, I looked at it with a jaundiced eye. Looked at it that way because of a certain skepticism that had been pretty well instilled in my thinking. But the more I looked at it, the more comfortable I became with the idea and the more potential that I really saw. And the potential really is to grow the industry within your own community and find ways to help and reward the industry within your own community. And I noted in this program one thing that really caught my eye and attention was the availability or what would be availability or potential for the availability of, not just some good management type of activity, but some what I would call research and development brain power that the average small person starting out or even expanding a little bit in the business might not have. I give, as an example, one of my clients under the TJTC program was Sears United States and Sears Canada. Both of those two companies have very spacious and opulent buildings in major metropolitan areas of the United States and Canada. And Sears Tower is still, I think, the largest building in the city of Chicago. In Sears Tower, two floors of the Sears Tower are devoted to research and development. One floor is attorneys, and the other floor is the techies, if that's the right terminology to go with it. And this program for the entrepreneur, the young or older, energetic, enthusiastic people wanting to start a business or wanting to expand their business would be able to provide some resources that heretofore are basically not present for the average small business in this country. So I've joined in and have been even more pleased after co-signing on this this bill. Been very pleased with the activities that have taken place. The activities of the task force as they have worked on it since the last session. And the recommendations and reports and the cooperation that they have gotten. So I offer to you this bill and encourage your help and support. And with that, I'll answer any questions or let Representative Smith, who is far more knowledgeable than I am, proceed with this.
Let's go to Representative Smith.
Thank you, Mr. Kushner. I was wondering if we could bring up David Beam, who is from the task force the working on this program for the regional partners or related program with the regional partners, and that we can walk through the findings and recommendations of the task force.
Please.
That'd be all right?
That'd be good.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jefferson Smith, representing District 47 in the Oregon House. I want to thank, first of all, the co-sponsors who sit on the committee for your help. I want to give you an update on your, on our bill and on the work of the task force. We'll start with a really quick intro. That'll be review for some folks and more fresh for a couple people. Then talk about the findings and recommendations and some of the pilot projects that have happened here in Oregon and in Florida that have demonstrated proof on the ground. The quick refresher was as originally developed in Littleton, Colorado, and then elsewhere and analyzed and then pushed by the Lowe Foundation and the Kauffman Foundation for Entrepreneurship, was recognizing how often we hear somebody say, we could attract more business to Oregon if we would just do blank.
Less often did we hear, you know, we would grow more jobs in Oregon if we would just do blank. But recognizing that our growth has happened, as Representative Jensen touched on, from those earlier stage companies more, and those homegrown companies more than from larger companies or companies that we attracted satellite or even headquarters at, and recognizing that it's relatively a rare thing to attract a headquarters, to get a headquarters to move. They developed a set of tools around, and this is the simple way to think about it, helping homegrown companies find new markets and find new customers. Doing it with a handful of tools, including market research and analysis, as Representative Jensen was talking about, GIS mapping, helping with search engine optimization, helping with peer mentoring and CEO networking, like the Oregon Entrepreneurs Network does. And it's focused on being a sustained strategy. One of the, as was pointed out to us by the, I think it was the Lowe Foundation, one of the challenges they'd seen was that politicians, such as, I guess, myself, would push for programs that lent themselves to ribbon cuttings, which were politically relevant events and would turn out in the newspaper, but that sustainable, ongoing growth might not turn to the newspaper, but was more, but that success ultimately was a process, not an event. Some members of the committee may remember, the original Kickstart bill was passed in the last special session to establish the task force, included public-private sector participants and economic development folks to assess Oregon's continuum of business, analyze gaps, focused on second-stage companies, and make a recommendation or a set of them. Have had a bunch of meetings with private sector folks and companies, along as well as with business service providers and business organizations. Sent out a request for public request for information. Received responses from several organizations who are interested in partnering on a program, and not all of them, thankfully, begging for money. Along the way, the task force came up with its set of preliminary findings and recommendations. This is not expected to be the last set, but it is a helpful first set. And with that, I want to turn it over. We may do some going back and forth, but wanted to turn it over to David Beam, who can introduce himself and has been one of the really valuable members of leaders of the task force.
Good afternoon, Chair Benz and representatives. Thank you, Representative Smith. My name is David Beam. I'm the Economic Development Planner for the City of Newburgh. I'm also the Chair of the Portland-Vancouver Regional Partners Economic Gardening Program, and I'm also a member of the Statewide Task Force for Economic Gardening. Ever since this, the task force was established with the last legislative session, we've been busy trying to develop a good plan for a statewide program. And so what I'd like to show you today is a list of findings and recommendations that the committee has come up with. Is that the first? Yeah, okay. Sorry. The first one is the showing that the fastest growing population of firms is that 1% of the firms create 40% of the jobs. And too close?
Yes.
Okay. Can you hear me? Okay. And that these companies tend to be smaller, less than 100 employees, and they also tend to be younger, somewhere between 3 and 5 years. In the time period between 1998 and 2008, resident companies were the job creators, creating over 200,000 jobs, whereas non-resident companies were net job losers. And the smaller, again, we're talking about smaller companies were the net job creators, while the larger companies were actually net job losers. And this right here kind of shows that out, how that works out with the larger companies. We see more of the negative numbers on the larger companies. As Representative Smith indicated, the economic gardening is an entrepreneurial strategy for grow jobs, but it's also a kind of a slow rollout without a lot of ribbon cuttings. Um, He talks a little bit about, you know, this has been going on probably for over 20 years now, and there are lots of different programs out there. Probably the godfather of it is Littleton, Colorado, started back in the early 90s. But now some of the local entities have been picking up on that. City of Beaverton's been doing it for a couple of years now. And again, it's our region, the Portland-Vancouver Regional Partners also has one. And now we also have a state model, the GrowFL. Again, just going back, this economic gardening is a very focused type of economic development strategy. It's not your typical business retention and expansion program. It's very focused. It targets looking at companies that are traded sector. Smaller companies, 10 to 99 employees. Gross revenue is $1 million to $50 million. And that they have a high potential for growth. And they've indicated that, again, they're young. We're talking about growth within the last 3 to 5 years. And these are companies that can bring new wealth to the state as well as create new jobs for Oregonians. And we think it's up some of the discussions we've had from some of the rural sectors talking about, well, there's not a lot of these kind of companies out there, and we think we could make some adjustments to accommodate being able to work with some of the companies in the rural areas as well. We recognize we did a survey of all the different kinds of business system programs in Oregon, whether it be public or private, and we find that, yeah, there's a good continuum of economic development services, but we do think there is a gap there, especially in services to second stage companies, and we think economic gardening would be a great addition to fill that gap. A lot of private organizations are pushing this type of economic development strategy right now, the Kellogg Foundation, as well as the Kauffman Foundations. And they've been very active working on a national level, assisting lots of different organizations in trying to get these kinds of programs started. And the most successful one they've had so far is working with the Grow Florida program. Task Force estimates that probably that we want to target about 100 companies over a two-year period, and we think the program will cost somewhere between $750,000 and $1 million to work with. And we would hope some of that funding, we might be able to get some of that from federal as well as some private grants. We've identified some potential grantors that might be interested in this program. Again, these are the recommendations we're having here. Oregon needs to consider providing services for second stage companies, including all the things that economic gardening does, like market research strategies, GIS search engine optimization, working with web and new like social media. And a real important piece is the CEO peer networking events. That's a real important piece. Businesses want to talk to other CEOs. They don't want to talk to policy wonks or bureaucrats or whatever. They want to talk to people who have really experienced the problems, and they have the best issue to be able to learn from that. We have, again, let's talk about continuing. We have a good continuum of economic development services, but we do believe that we can integrate with the other services. We're especially working a lot with the small business development centers and like. We think we can enhance them by having an economic gardening program. Again, one of the key parts of an economic gardening program doing on a statewide level is being able to work well with the partners around the state. There's a lot of economic development organizations, whether Small Business Development Center, Oregon Micro Enterprise Network, all those kinds of partners. You need to work with those folks because those are the people that are on the ground. They know their companies that are locally with them that they work with. They're the ones that will help you feed the good potential clients into the economic gardening program to be able to provide them with the services. So this is, again, talking about, and we want to be able to assure that water the last corn stalk. What we mean by that is we want to make sure that we can have this economic gardening program that will be able to assist businesses throughout the state, not just in the urban areas, but also out in all the rural areas as well. And so we ask that the legislature renew the task force to allow us to continue on developing the plan, and so that we can come to something that actually comes to fruition and implementation. And important piece, of course, is always metrics. How do you, again, we want to do this pilot program for a couple of years, and so we'd like to, everybody wants to know what's the success, the impacts. So these are some of the metrics we thought we would use. New customer sales, new customers in sales, new markets accessed, revenue growth, employment growth, total wage base by the median wage and per employee, portions of the attributed services provided. They're going to grow, but you have to figure out how much of that was attributed to what services you provided them. And then just general customer satisfaction. Now, this is the piece I was going to do as well. Now, understand, again, most economic gardening programs throughout the United States have all been local programs. But it is a scalable type of strategy you can do. Portland-Vancouver Regional Partners was one of the very first ones to ever do a regional approach in the United States. We worked on it the last couple of years, and last year we did a pilot program with a small amount of money, and we served 30 companies. We're just now starting to go out there and talk to them about trying to gauge the impact of the services, but so far we're finding some very good responses from them and results. And one of our stars is the Keyscaper company, and you're going to see a video as we get up to that, talking about that. It's also scalable to the state level, though, and the best example, of course, is Grow Florida. A couple years ago, they started this. Last year, they did a program. They budgeted about $1.5 million. You recall, we're asking somewhere between $750 and $1 million, but they're a much larger state than we are. But they served about 200 companies, and they recently did an economic impact analysis of that program. It's done by a third-party firm, and they used a software program called M-Plan. You may have heard it before. It's very commonly used. Business Oregon actually uses it to gauge the impacts of projects that they implement. Well, the results were pretty impressive. Through that, they created almost 600 jobs, created almost about 400 jobs, indirect jobs, and about 450 induced jobs for a total of 1,458 jobs. Now, you break that down into the budget level, that comes out to about $3,000 per job for the direct jobs, or you can look at it as $1,000 overall per job. Now, my opinion, that's a pretty good return on investment for economic development resources. It's not, I don't think it's just my opinion, the governor of Florida, Charlie Crist, he just was so impressed with that he significantly increased the funding for year two on that program. It's also interesting to note that program, they estimate, created about $281 million of additional economic activity within Florida. So why did the Grow Florida program work so well? There's lots of different reasons, obviously, but I think there's a few that I want to point out. One is they hired a very highly qualified staff. Not everybody can do this kind of thing. You need staff that have very good soft skills. They know how to have the right temperament to deal with these types of companies. And you obviously need good technical staff as well to be able to do the good research. Secondly, they stayed kept high fidelity towards economic gardening concepts and principles. Economic gardening, as I mentioned before, is not your typical business retention expansion program. It's extremely focused working on those second stage trade sector companies. Thirdly, it was highly autonomous program. They are able to, they're highly qualified staff. They know what they do want to do, and they fortunately were able to do it without too much disruption and accomplish the mission that they were trying to achieve. And finally, they had a high-level partnerships. We talked about it. It's really important to work with all the partners, all your economic development partners within the state, because they're the ones ultimately that are going to bring in the clients into the program. But ultimately, the program needs to have produce a product that the businesses can use that are actionable and high quality. Again, as I mentioned, we have a good continuum of economic development services, and I think what the economic gardening would fill a real important gap that we have in those services, and I think would produce a really good return on investment for the economic development resources put into it. So I certainly was asked that you support House Bill 2879, and show if you do so, I think you'll be demonstrating a certain amount of faith in the entrepreneurial abilities of Oregonians and making a great investment for the state in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. Anything to follow up, Representative?
Thank you, Mr. Chair, for the record, Jefferson Smith, District 47. If the chair has time, given our fire drill, which I think and hope that it was just a drill, despite my comment on the way out that I hope that it was real, so they weren't just sending us outside for no reason. There is a video from a CEO of one of the companies that used the regional partner service, and if there is time still to show it, it'd be seven minutes. Yeah, not enormously long. It's interesting testimony. We can only hope that it'll translate over the video in person. It was really helpful. He'll look familiar. Oh, that's not what I meant to do.
Thank you. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Tony.
Will we be able to hear it?
I'm the CEO of Strategic Printing and Manufacturing Solutions. We started a job shop for high-tech industry, plastic molders, medical, and dental manufacturers. We have a lot of experience with that.
Can you hear that? I feel like the city of Portland.
Towards the end of 2000,
with the microphone next to it.
Oh yeah, try that. Second.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Senator, members of the committee. My name is Tony Tom, and I am the CEO of Strategic Printing and Manufacturing Solutions. We started out primarily as a job shop for high-tech industry, plastic molders, medical, and dental manufacturers. We have a lot of experience with that industry, and we knew how to bring those products to market. Towards the end of 2009, we introduced a new product line, which was Keyscaper. We started out with keyboards and mice that were custom printed. This involved an entirely new customer base with an entirely different set of rules. Because of this, we struggled with how to bring this product to market and whose advice we should heed. Sales were lower than we hoped while we were investing money from our industrial division and then also our personal funds as the recession deepened. Because of the recession and the immense amount of energy required to keep our core business going, we had neither the time nor the resources to do our own market research. Also, because of the timing, like many other small businesses, our confidence was at an all-time low and we were susceptible to bad advice. Then, in April of 2010, the City of Tualatin contacted me to introduce me to Michael Gerton of the Regional Partners Economic Gardening Program. At first, to be quite honest, I was a little unsure about the program because I'd had some negative interactions with other state agencies, so I wanted nothing to do with bureaucracy. The fact, though, that somebody from the city said that they would come out and be with us made me figure that I had nothing to lose. The meeting started with a tour of our facility during which we showed Michael all of our products and discussed our strengths and weaknesses. By the end of that meeting, it became apparent to me that Michael was perceptive and knowledgeable, and I felt hopeful. By the next business day, Michael had emailed me with a list of subjects he felt he should research for us, and his list was spot on. Within a couple of weeks, we received a report from Michael that helped us make some necessary changes in our marketing plan. He included a SWOT analysis that further showed that he understood the situation, we could trust his advice. And I believe they've passed out that analysis, so if anybody wants to see the specifics. But basically, we were targeting the wrong market, and we were using the wrong channels to ever get into the correct markets. We utilized his specific information and suggestions, and we started to make changes. We tightened the rules with the reps we were using, and we eventually ended those relationships. We started targeting the markets that Michael had suggested, and we, by October, we were selling into Best Buy and other outlets. Significantly, our Keyscaper revenue went from a few thousand dollars a month to tens of thousands of dollars. By October, sales of the keyboards and mice were actually $75,000, and that does not include any other sales of banners or other products that come from that division. The entire division sales for that month was $140,000. In addition, Michael introduced us to another Oregon company, Ovation Works. They're a promotional products company with whom we have now partnered. Through them, we are selling to such companies as Google and Boeing. Because of the increase in sales and royalties that we are giving our licensors, we've also been able to get approval from them to market additional products, which I know Michael talked about, the iPhone and iPad cases. We get those blanks from a company in California, and because they're close to us, we can do other products. They carry such things as Kindle covers and Droid covers, so if demand exists, we can do that quickly. The sales of the keyboards are still somewhat cyclical because you are getting items that are stocked for specific seasons. But fortunately, it appears that the cycles of that division and our industrial division are complementary, and we've been able to maintain steady employment. Because of this success, our confidence is up not only in this division, but our industrial division. We've been able to provide our employees now with full employment and even overtime, and we've hired more people. Since last summer, we have hired 11 people that are regular on our employees, and we've also, like as of today, we had 5 leased employees from a temporary agency. This is a small number, but it's relatively quite large because we started out with 25 to 30 employees. It's important to note that these 11 people were primarily on unemployment before we hired them, or else they were in jobs for which they were overqualified, and now they've freed up those jobs for people who are on unemployment. I'm also hearing from our employees that they are planning vacations. They are taking on home improvement projects. They're shopping and eating out because they feel more confident. So they are adding dollars to the Oregon economy, and that's what this program is really about. The state of Oregon has high unemployment, and I know that as a small business owner, I take my responsibility to my employees very seriously. My employees and their families are counting on me to make good decisions to help keep them employed. And I'm not the only business owner that feels that way. Other business owners feel it too, and it's very frightening to be alone and not have resources to help you make those decisions. The Regional Partners Economic Gardening Program gave me the support that I needed, and I wish there were more programs like this. We need programs that provide education and knowledge, not that bail businesses out with money that is not monitored and might have very little long-term effect on employment rates. A program such as the Regional Partners Economic Gardening Program that helps business owners keep Oregonians employed is a positive investment in our state's future, reaping benefits many times over. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, Mr. Chair. We can pause there and take questions if people want to hear about a potential structure of a program. We're essentially done with that exception. We're essentially done with where we are with the findings and recommendations. I don't know if there's other people who want to testify, but be happy to chat briefly about the structure of a potential program if that's interesting to the committee. Don't want to put you too much to sleep on a Friday afternoon.
We have two folks that are signed up, but are there questions for this panel? I have a couple. It seems to me that the concept is one that you might, if you were a successful company, go hire a consultant to provide. Is your thought that the state should be getting into the consultant business? And I think this line of questions has a strangely deja vu feel about it. I think we might have had the same discussion 2 years ago.
Yeah, I think it's one of the questions. You know, why consider ourselves a participant in the market? And if we are a participant in the market, how do we limit that, or how do we do it? Why should we do it? And when should we do it? I think a few answers. One, I think, as this committee generally acknowledges with just about any of the bills, any of the tools we've considered, is with an acknowledgement that Oregon is a market player, that we do care about outcomes. We want to be fair in how we do that, but we are not, for instance, neutral between Oregon companies and non-Oregon companies. In certain ways, we have to be because the Constitution says so. In other ways, we don't have to be, and we shouldn't be because we care about Oregon businesses. So I would say that generally. Second thing I would say is that there is, I think, some of the reason why there's been significant energy around this in localities and states like Florida is it's focused on private sector job growth, as distinct from a jobs program where the job is over as soon as the dollar runs out. This is to give private sector companies the tools to compete over time. Third, I would say we already have, through the Small Business Development Centers and through Business Oregon, a set of tools that are, to use your term, are essentially consultive practices. We tend to do those with smaller companies. When we did the gaps in it, for instance, we helped with finding a small business loan, helping to write a business plan, etc. In the gaps analysis, what was recognized was that with those high growth potential businesses, some of the services the state offered weren't as helpful. Right? They already had a business plan. They already knew how to get a small business loan. But there might be ways to be helpful that would actually have positive, measurable outcomes. Which brings me then to the fourth. I think one of the key things then is that you keep it small. In part of the discipline that is part of the program, this is about finding new private sector and strengthening existing private sector relationships. So as we've seen from economic gardening programs around the country, as they grow, we're seeing more in Washington State as well, they pivot pretty quickly and refer to private sector consultants. They get a set of services that very often aren't available due to sort of scale economy challenges, aren't easy to find if you're not, as Representative Jensen said, or you don't have two floors of the Sears tower dedicated to similar things. If you're Keyscaper, if you're Axiom Electronics, if you're Euphoria Chocolates, if you're Indo Windows, access to some of these, some of this advice, some of these tools is not as prevalent. I think David and maybe Representative Jensen wants to offer a crack at that question as well. And all I would add additional is, I guess the way when I got into it, and I didn't understand it when it was first pitched to me. I will, acknowledge to the committee. When I first got into it, it was recognized that we spend a bunch of money in economic development right now, right? We spend it through tax breaks. We spend it through direct expenditures. We spend a bunch right now. So to me, the key question is, what's the highest return on investment we can get? That, to me, is the ultimate question. And when I look, and as I shared with Representative Sheehan, for instance, and maybe with others, when I look at the stimulus package passed by the president for whom I voted, but they, according to their numbers, estimated $92,000 a job, and I see Florida between $1,000 and $3,000 a job, with a very high satisfaction rating from most of the companies working on it, it seems that it's a program that has greater potential than some of the other ways that we might decide to invest resources going forward.
That's a very good question, and I've certainly asked that myself over the last couple of years. And what I've found, certainly, in going to, I've gone to some economic gardening conferences and the like, and I think the task force itself asked that question. And I think the best response I heard was from Rob Pochert, who was on the task force. He had to resign for other reasons, for personal reasons. But Rob Pochert was the economic developer for Beaverton's program for the last few years. And that question always kind of bothered him, too. And he's asked many of consultants on that. And basically, the answer is, these companies are just aren't big enough for them. They don't have an interest in dealing with these people, which I find kind of interesting in the sense of, you know, if somebody is being successful, you know, you might get in on the early game and develop a relationship with these companies so that when they get larger, you have a good business relationship with that business, and you can grow along with them. But that's the basic answer that I'm hearing, is that marketing consultants just don't want to deal with these smaller companies.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, you and I have had a lot of conversations offline on this. This is, and in this committee, it seems like we get a lot of conversation on green technology and other things that I'm not very familiar with. I'm relieved to have something that I'm very familiar with this time around. And I don't know that I need to declare a conflict of interest because it's moves in the past, but I was hired by the City of Beaverton to promote their economic gardening concept through my advertising agency. So I know Mr. Pochert and have worked with him on that. Now, in my research on economic gardening, this was developed in Littleton deployed by various municipal governments because it's a sort of a small government idea of to address a problem of not being able to grow within the area itself. The economic gardening concept refers to taking an existing business and helping them grow a little bit rather than being able to bring somebody in to the area. The state of Oregon, we need to bring people into Oregon and recruit and get new businesses here. And as I'm looking over some of the notes here, it looks like Florida did it, and it looks like Kansas did it, but only focused on the rural side. Were there any other states that have deployed this statewide? And if so, were those successful? Were those unsuccessful? And how does that sort of match up against the regional objectives of the concept of economic gardening?
So do you want to take a first crack? You want me to? You looked eager.
Okay, sure, yeah. Fine. I'm always eager.
The only other state that I know, there was actually one that preceded Florida, and that was Wyoming. They did do something like that, but again, it was a small effort. What was that joke somebody told me about Wyoming? It's like a city with a really, really long street in it or something. I mean, it's just, it's a small population. It was a small effort. So Florida is truly the first really significant one. Yeah, Kansas, all the other ones are just now starting, just now. Florida is only like 2 years ahead. Like I said, they just started it like a couple years ago. There's Florida, I think Georgia's putting an effort into it. There were a couple other states, but yeah, and the Kansas one, again, but their focus is rural. And I think that should perhaps benefit us because we can learn from them, hopefully, maybe some of their experiences of how we can implement the rural part of that of the program.
Chair Fall?
Follow up.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, let me take a crack. So we would be an earlier adopter. The wouldn't be the earliest adopter. It'd be, you know, in fact, more proven and with more data than a host of decisions that I'm relatively confident we're going to make in this very committee, this very session. We would be an earlier adopter. The other part of your question, sort of the earlier part, was, and something we talked about a little bit, was why state, why not just local? And I'd offer a few answers to that. One is that the kind of localities that can put together a program are relatively a short list in our state. Right, you know, Portland can do it. Beaver can do it. Yours could do it. They could do it in Eugene, maybe Bend, maybe sort of Southern Oregon, but you start scaling down size of town and less likely to have a company where we're trying to find jobs drivers, particularly as we're kind of going through a 40-year painful transition from a natural resource dependent economy to a natural resource inclusive economy. And trying to again water every corn stalk. I think having a program that is linked with small business development centers and potentially Oregon State and the Extension School could reach out to places that might not be able to have their own crew dedicated just to their town. Another answer is in talking to a couple members of OEDA recently, eager to consider and eager to support and see a statewide program, in part because there would be certain scale economies, certain access to certain private sector data that might be out of reach even from a Corvallis or a Beaverton, but that if they were coordinated a little more, might be able to get access to the, might get access to that data. So it'd be, those would be a couple reasons why I think a statewide program makes sense.
Representative Weiner.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Smith, Jensen, great bill. But I think we need to look at the broader picture on it because, like she was talking about, the SWOT analysis, where you're looking at businesses' strengths, weaknesses, what their opportunities are and everything, and I think it's actually kind of the model for the legislature. If I have a business and I hire everybody that's like-minded with me, we're not going to get a lot done. We're going to get a lot of the same thing done. Same thing when we have Republicans and Democrats. We both have a different set of eyes looking at something, so we should be coming up with the best solutions. That's where I see this as being that other set of eyes and kind of the model for going and putting together the business plan on how we need to fix Oregon. This is one piece. But we also need to be bringing businesses in to help these small businesses to sell to. This, in combination with the right incentives for businesses, I think could be very powerful. This by itself, I think, could not be very powerful. I think it's something we need to have multiple options put together, and we need to sit down as part of economic development and look at building the right plan and sending the right product out of this committee. So, your thoughts on that, but I'm glad to see it's a Republican Democrat bringing it up, and all of our eyes together, we could turn the state around and have a great economy here.
Let me say, Mr. Chair, Representative Widener, in terms of this shouldn't be the only thing we do, not only yes, but hell yes. This is a relatively modest, heck yes, this is a relatively modest program. As I think, as even the initial precatory bill laid forth, the idea was to look at the business services continuum, analyze gaps, and if there were gaps, make recommendations regarding those gaps, not to replace the field or try to fill that field, but to fill gaps. And I'd offer two additional thoughts that are somewhat germane to your question, I hope. One is, and don't want to necessarily put it oppositional to a recruitment strategy. In fact, my aide, Alex Tinker, who probably deserves more credit on, to the extent credit is owed on this than any other single person, pointed out to me and others that if you think of some of Business Oregon's work as recruiting companies to locate here, this is helping companies recruit customers to purchase here. Right? So in some ways, it's not particularly a sea change, but rather still trying to attract energy, but some of that energy can be purchase energy. The other, and to even amplify why I think it's important to think about, I think all of us think it's important to think about as part of a continuum, is the perspective offered by the city of Beaverton. They've had really good fortune with it. It had really highly positive response. And one of the reasons that their mayor and their economic development team is so excited about it is because it has been able to expand in a relevant way their menu of things that they can offer to their local businesses when they're saying, here's some of the things our city can do to work with you and be supportive. And they found that if there were certain companies that could say, hey, we have this particular tax incentive tool. There are other companies we could say, hey, we can help you get a small business loan. But for the stage two business, that business that had, 24 employees, or she's not sitting back there, she's sitting inside that computer, like Keyscaper, for instance, where that menu was a little thinner and they had fewer reasons to go visit that business. They were losing their relationships with some of their companies, and that having this added element was giving them a reason to maintain those relationships and was part of their retention strategy. I would agree with you, having that as the only piece of retention strategy would almost certainly be foolish, but I think it's a helpful piece of one.
Yes, Reverend Sheehan.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. This was a criticism that I had of the Beaverton model back when I was working with them, and I'd like to see that. I'm happy to see that there are new things on this list of the things that you're adding to it than we had in Beaverton when I was involved. You've got search engine optimization, web, new media marketing, CEO peer networking events, and then the older stuff like the GIS analysis, these all are available in the private sector. And I guess to jump on the chair's comments earlier about how this seems to be something that successful companies do anyway, is the role of the Economic Gardening Program to connect these businesses with other businesses that offer this, or is this to provide these services through a new government agency?
Do you want to add what you want to do?
Either way. And if I may, we probably should keep it quite succinct. We have just a few minutes left, two more witnesses, okay. And then we have another bill. So thank you.
I'll be very succinct. No, this is not to drive it towards the private sector, or this, because the private sector does not seem to be filling that gap, so this will be a governmental program. And to address what you were asking about, I firmly believe that a program like this helps recruitment of businesses. One of the biggest things you do when you recruit businesses, you have those businesses will go out and they talk to the local businesses in whatever jurisdiction you're talking about. And they'll go out and talk to those CEOs and they'll say, how does the government around here treat you, that type of thing. If you have a good retention program, then those CEOs in your jurisdiction are going to say, hey, these guys treat us pretty well. And they also they really care about us. They look at it as a partnership. They try to help us grow here. I think that's a strong recruitment tool as well. So I certainly agree we need to do a balanced portfolio of recruitment as well as what we're proposing here, business retention expansion. And I think this is a good tool to do that as well.
So I would answer your question a bit differently. I would say that initial consulting, going to Keyscaper and saying, hey, you know, we could help you rethink some of your marketing strategy. I think that, you know, we are thinking about the structural options are not too different from some of the economic gardening programs that exist. In terms of who they pivot towards, there isn't a thought to create a, you know, Business Oregon office for GIS mapping, for instance, right? I mean, almost all the products that the economic gardening program uses are private sector products, and then referring them and pivoting relatively quickly, usually, to private sector partners. So that'd be my answer.
Thank you.
No further questions, Reverend Jensen. You've been surprisingly solemn.
I've been quiet. Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. When I am fortunate enough, as I am in this building, to be surrounded by minds much superior to mine, I am inclined to be quiet and listen. But
you try to teach me the same.
Keep working on that, please, Reverend Jensen.
I do appreciate the questions that the folks at the committee has brought up, Mr. Chair, and they are all good questions. I think the examination of the record where this economic gardening has been in place and operational will show that the service provided would exceed that otherwise would be sought out for by the businesses. And you know, if there isn't a market for it, then the program would not have been successful in other places. So,
thank you. And thank you very much for the bill and the discussion. And we have two witnesses, Sandy Messerly, I think, Kathleen Hutchison. I have those names close to being right.
Good afternoon, Representative Benz and all the other representatives. I'm Sandy Geiser-Messerly. I'm with the South Coast Development Council in Coos Bay, Oregon. We work to enhance the economic vitality in Coos, Curry, and Western Douglas County. I've been with the organization 2 years, and in that two-year time period, this particular aspect of economic development has caught the keen attention of the people in our area. Let me explain to you why. We are not on a major corridor. We have very limited industrial lands available to us with which to recruit new industries. And as you know, we're pretty economically challenged. What economic gardening, we believe, can offer to us is the opportunity to truly capitalize and catapult those businesses that are there that might be on the cutting edge of being able to evolve into a larger entity. So the International, the Oregon International Port of Coos Bay asked the SCDC to undertake an economic gardening study last year. We recruited an intern, a graduate student from Willamette University by the name of Bradford McEwen, and Bradford did that study for us and made a presentation in front of the International Port of Coos Bay last fall. I've brought with me discs that include not only that presentation of the study that was done, but his actual presentation to the port. We feel it has so much potential for rural communities that the port has now asked us to put together an implementation plan of economic gardening for our specific region. So I'm here for a couple of reasons. The first of all is to tell you that I'm wholeheartedly in support of this kind of effort, not exclusively separate and apart from economic recruitment or recruitment of new businesses. There is a place for both. In order for us to have a successful economy, we have to be able to recruit new businesses, but we also have to be able to sustain and grow the ones that are here. Quite honestly, when you're looking at a business to come to your area, one of the first things they want to do is talk to a business that's already thriving there, and we have to be able to show them that. We can't just bring them here, start them up, and let them run. We have to be able to help them make that next step, and there's many, many that have not quite acquired yet. The opportunity, the availability, the market research, all of the things we were talking about, the GIS systems, all of they don't have access to that as a small company that can help them make that next jump, that can help them make an educated decision about making that next step. So we're here to try to help them do that. But as, again, a small little not-for-profit group, we need access to those tools as well. So I think we're not so much talking about a new government agency as an enhancement of those opportunities that already exist in the state of Oregon that will let us fully utilize a broad scope of economic development tools to bring businesses to full fruition in our beloved state. Can I help you with any questions?
Questions for Ms. Fitness?
I have a question.
Please.
Yes. How did you become so wonderful? That's my question.
I don't know.
Thank you for your testimony.
But I would urge that you include the South Coast in this effort moving forward. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you for driving all the way up here. Further questions? Seeing none, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And I think, colleagues, we are going to close the work session. Excuse me. Yeah. Do I have another witness? I'm sorry. Come on up. This must be Kathleen Hutchinson.
Yes, sir.
Sorry about that.
Well, you've already got so much good information here today, I don't really feel the need to talk about what economic gardening is.
And your name.
Oh, I'm sorry, Kathleen Hutchinson. I'm the executive director of the Business Enterprise Center in Oregon, and we're an accelerator, and we are actually the oldest accelerator in the state. In that role, we keep track of a lot of our graduates whenever we can, and one of the things that we have observed is that when our companies hit the stage two, and they're really poised for growth, but they don't have access to the same type of resources that maybe the Sears companies do. They sort of can just be stagnant for a long time at this one level when they have all that potential to grow. So our mayor, Charlie Tomlinson, our previous mayor, he's no longer mayor, and some other community members got together and we started discussing what can we do for these companies. And that's when we sort of landed on economic gardening as probably a really good mechanism for us to see what we could do for those companies and provide the services. We in our investigations, it looked like economic gardening costs only about $3,500 per company. And in the Florida information, I think that translates into less than $1,000 per job. But What we did at the Business Enterprise Center is wrote a small grant to the city of Corvallis for a pilot project to start an economic gardening program here in Corvallis. And we just got going on it, but our results have been really good so far. I was very interested in and saw the potential in economic gardening, but now that I've had the opportunity to sit in some of the consulting sessions where they're talking with the company and the CEO about what they can do for the company and targeting their market better than the company was, it's very exciting, and I'm looking forward to what's going to happen. The company that we are using for the pilot project is ViewPlus Technologies. ViewPlus Technologies is technology that transferred out of Oregon State University. They came to the Business Accelerator at the BEC and graduated, and they went from 0 to 45 employees, and they've been hanging out right around 45 for a while. They anticipate with the support from Economic Gardening Jumpstart Team, the Edward Lowe Foundation, and what they have in place, that they're probably going to grow by 30% to 40% in the upcoming year. It just seems to me that it makes sense that these companies with the potential for high growth and high job increases get some support at the state level. And while we can put together things in Beaverton and in Coos Bay or Corvallis, if it's something that comes through the state and instead of being fragmented, it's puzzle pieces that fit together, it seems like it'll be much more effective. So I would encourage you to continue the task force and look favorably on economic gardening in the state.
Thank you. Questions? Seen none. Thank you very much. Colleagues, that finishes our testimony on House Bill 2879. I'm going to close the public hearing on that House bill. And I think we're going to have a hearing after this one by health care, I'm going to, with the...
Unless you want to do it really quick.
Are you okay with that?
I'm good. Just mean you guys can't beat me up with questions.
Okay. All right. All right, with that, we will open a public hearing on House Bill 3353. President Widener.
My staff's going to go nuts. I just told them we were carrying it over. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, Representative Jim Widener, House District 24, encompassing Yamhill County and some of Polk County. Members of the Transportation Committee and Economic Development Committee, thank you for your time, opportunity to further explain the intent and substance of House Bill 3353. House Bill 3353 was introduced as a placeholder bill to begin the discussion on job development and how to encourage entrepreneurial activity here in Oregon. We all understand the dire economic situation we are facing, and I look forward to an energetic and collaborative discussion throughout this session to fix the problem. We must remember that we are in competition with 49 other states for business. If we do not actively recruit businesses to relocate or remain in Oregon, then bolder and more economically viable states will win for themselves the prosperity, job opportunities, and state revenue that could have been ours. I've worked with the Oregon Revenue Department to draft an amendment to this bill that will greatly reduce the fiscal of the bill by allowing the Oregon Growth Account Board to determine who would be eligible for the participation in this tax credit. This amendment will circumvent the need for the additional program to certify and handle applications by diverting this to the already appropriate board. I look forward to continuing communication with all these agencies and with members of this committee to find a bipartisan common sense approach to encourage further economic growth. I am more than willing to take any suggestions to make this bill a more viable option, and all portions of this bill are on the table for discussion. I appreciate your input and hope that a collaborative solution can be created. I know that we can work together to create a fertile business climate that can produce job opportunities that create wealth and prosperity for the state and our citizens of Oregon. Thank you for hearing this bill today, and a little background on it.
I basically dropped this bill, so we did have a placeholder bill or a vehicle, which we moved quite a few of those vehicles through this committee today over to revenue. But it's to open the door for the discussion and make sure that we're putting together the right business plan for the state of Oregon and sending all of the right policy over to revenue so they can spit them out and we can actually spur economic development in the state of Oregon. With the bills that we've heard earlier today, they kind of encourage it. When we went to the green jobs, even though I was training, that actually is a portion of this. This here is a tax credit that creates investment in emerging growth companies in Oregon. We have workers that are getting laid off right now out of high paying jobs. Most of these guys are making $80,000 to $100,000 a year, and we need to make sure we're creating jobs in emerging companies coming into this state where they can go into and not look at a loss in income when they move into those professions. So with that, I'm open to any questions.
Thank you, Representative. Questions? So, you know, we have another person signed up to talk to the bill. I will say, I should ask, if you have an amendment coming, do you have an amendment coming that we're going to see?
We do have an amendment coming. I don't know if it showed up yet, but it's with the department. This bill, when drafted, I didn't take a lot of time. I just dropped it because I wanted to get a placeholder for dealing with emerging growth companies and having a tax credit for them. Well, I didn't realize this bill, actually, the way it's written, was going to create a whole new department and agency and state government, and I had to remove that from it, and that's what the amendment does.
Okay.
So, and the department was here. They had just left, so under the assumption that we were carrying over till Monday. So, but one of the concerns they had when I left it wide open was they said this could have 25,000 companies applying for this, and I was thinking, well, maybe we should put some sideboards on that, but that would be a great thing because that would be a lot of jobs that are being created in the state.
It might have a modest fiscal issue.
Yes, if you notice, I did was quite generous with the credit.
I did notice. Well, thank you, Representative. Questions? Seeing none. We do have one person signed up, David Roth, or was this Mr. Roth? And not to hurry you too much, but at any moment,
but please hurry.
The chair from the next committee will be coming through that door.
Thank you, Chair. I plan to be brief. I only heard about this bill today. I was down here to testify concerning the Oregon Medical Tax Credit, which is likely to create a very big hole in the budget on its own, one that's comparable to the impacts of some of the Betsy's that we've been worried about for the last couple of sessions. And it's one of those that I think is really needs to be taken firmly in hand, more firmly than the proposed bills do. In this particular case, I'm as an investor here in Oregon, I'm particularly concerned about the item in the bill. I understand the bill is a placeholder. I gather from what Representative Widener has just said that the 70% might itself be a placeholder. Whether it is or not, it's there in black and white, and I'm really concerned that it represents a tax giveaway that would be very damaging. Get to an irony I think you'll all appreciate sums up my concern here. Ordinarily, when I hear from business people concerning their views about how government should conduct itself, I hear, you hear, that they would like government to behave a lot more like a business than it does ordinarily. Now, in this case, we have a bill that appears to be intended to make the state more businesslike in its recruitment of companies from outside for the sake of economic growth here. Unfortunately, it seems to me it is the opposite. It puts the state in the opposite of a businesslike position. If the state was going to take a businesslike view of the recruitment, it certainly would not be offering 70% inducement to the outsider. What we're talking about here is essentially a business deal. The state, if it is to be businesslike, should be asking for a much more serious quid pro quo than the prospect of jobs, and it should be much more skeptical about an enterprise that expects that somebody else should provide 70% of the capital as the basis for the project. That's where I am coming from. Where it leads me to go is to propose this, that in discussing amendments to this bill and related bills, I propose that this committee and the authors of the bill take very seriously the idea of introducing an equity component of quid pro quo between the state and any of those companies, businesses that are seeking an investment from the state in their enterprise, whether it's old or new. That's something I've heard other people mention before. I haven't heard it, seen it in the press. I haven't seen it in any of the discussions in the Oregonian's review of the Betsy case the last week. But it seems to me that it's core. If the state is to protect itself from exploitation by investors looking for easy money and looking to play off one state against another, or one state against 49 others, and then throw in China and Mexico into the bargain.
Mr. Roth, if you can get 2 o'clock, we now are 30 seconds over our
yes.
time.
The state needs to be looking at an equity position in these deals. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for your patience in waiting. Further testimony on this bill? Seeing no one, I'm going to close the public session on 3353 and adjourn the meeting of the House Committee on Transportation and Economic Development.